a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
South Dakota Senate will now come to order. And leading us in our prayer this morning is Reverend Carl Kroger from the Peer for Peer Ministerial Association. And our pages of the day leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance to our nation's flag are Jessica Dury from Webster and Allison Ginden from Peer.
Let us pray. Almighty God, we gather this morning with heavy hearts, mindful of those persons who have been killed and harmed in the path of waves and earthquakes. We ask that you would be with those who have survived, those who are awaiting rescue, and those who are still in the path of the storm. May you watch over them and protect them and be with their loved ones. God, such events remind us of how small our world is and how interconnected we all are. Decisions we make set in motion a chain of events that affect many people. As this body deliberates on the budget, I pray that the senators might be aware of how each line item will impact communities and individuals in many aspects of their lives. May our budget create a set of ripples that brings hope, not despair, opportunities, and not dreams deferred. May it be so. Amen.
Amen.
Secretary, will call the roll, please.
Senators Adelstein, Bogalka, Bradford, Brown, Buell, Cutler, Ferrix, Frisley, Garnos, Gray, Hansen, Haverly, Heineman, Holeen, Hunstead, Hunhoff, Johnston, Krauss, Krebs, Lederman, Maher, Nelson, Nordstrup, Nygaard, Olson, Peters, Putnam, Rampelberg, Rave, Roden, Schleckaway, Sutton, Tiedemann, Teason, Valley. There's a quorum present, Mr. President.
Approval of the journal.
Mr. President, the Committee on Legislative Procedure respectfully reports that the Secretary of the Senate has had under consideration the Senate Journal of the 36th day. All errors, typographical or otherwise, are duly marked in the temporary journal for correction, and we hereby move the adoption of the report. Respectfully submitted, Bob Gray, Chair.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Reports of Standing Committee.
Mr. President, the Committee on Legislative Procedure respectfully reports that Senate Bills 3, 33, 35, 44, 86, 133, 140, 149, 152, 173, 176, 178, 190, 191, 196, and 200 were delivered to His Excellency the Governor for his approval at 8:45 a.m. March 11, 2011. Respectfully submitted, Bob Gray, Chair.
Reports of select committees, please.
Report of conference committees. Mr. President, the conference committee respectfully reports that it has considered House Bill 1208 and the amendments made thereto made by the Senate and the disagreement of the two houses thereon and recommends that House Bill 1208 be amended as follows. Respectfully submitted, Cooper Garneau, Senate Committee Chair, Brian Gosch, House Committee Chair. Report of Senate Select Committee. Mr. President, your Select Committee appointed on legislative redistricting respectfully reports that it has had under consideration the appointments to the 2011 Legislative Redistricting Committee and recommends that the following members be appointed by the President pro tem: Senator Olson, Senator Brown, Senator Cutler, Senator Peters, Senator Rodin, Senator Schleckaway, Senator Bradford. Respectfully submitted, Bob Gray, Russell Olson, Jason Furyk's Senate Committees. Senator Olson moves that the report of the Select Committee relative to appointments to the 2011 Legislative Redistricting Committee be adopted.
Is there a second? Comments? All those in favor of adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. The report is so adopted. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to inform your honorable body that the House has adopted the report of the Conference Committee on House Bill 1208. Also, Mr. President, I have the honor to inform your honorable body that the House has appointed Reps Rausch, Lust, and Bernie Hunhoff as a committee of three in the part of the House to meet with the like committee on the part of the Senate pertaining to the fixing the time of adjournment sine die for the 86th legislative session. Also, Mr. President, I have the honor to inform your honorable body that the House has appointed Reps Rausch, Lust, and Bernie Hunhoff as a committee of three in the part of the House to meet with the like committee on the part of the Senate to wait upon His Excellency the Governor to inform him that the legislature has completed its labors and is ready to adjourn sine die and to ascertain if he has any further communications to make to the legislature. Respectfully submitted, Karen Gertis, Chief Clerk.
Before we move on to motions and resolutions, Senators, I know we're going to recess and then you'll caucus and come back in, but I'd like to take this opportunity to not only thank you for your hard work personally and your friendship. It's a blessing and a privilege to be back serving with you and for you. But most especially, I'd like for you to join with me and show your gratitude for the people that really make us good, look good next to our families and the people who have dedicated themselves. I think the people of South Dakota don't understand that the staffs that we have, the individuals, the secretaries, everybody that's not here that keeps this running really are serving the people as well. And for those of us who have been here a long time, there's so much that happens in the background, so many discussions, so many kindnesses, people watching out for us. And I'd like for you to join with me and express your gratitude to our front desk team, Trudy and Kay and the Carolins. You know, you just... You've just been so awesome, and to be part of this family again is impressive. Please join me in thanking our front team here. Motions and resolutions.
Senator Olson moves that when we adjourn today, we adjourn to convene at 10 a.m. on Monday, March 28th, the 38th legislative day.
Second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried.
Senator Olson moves that the Senate do now recess until 11 a.m.
Second. All those in favor of recess signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Announcements. Senator Russell Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President, and the Senate Republicans will caucus immediately in room 423, not at 3 o'clock, now.
Any other announcements? We are in recess. Thank you. The Senate will reconvene and will revert to order of business 4, please.
Executive Communications. Mr. President, members of the Senate, I have the honor to inform you that on March 10, 2011, I approved Senate Bills 8, 10, 11, 12, 13, 20, 22, 32, 34, 36, 101, 111, 132, 139, 146, 147, and 168. And the same have been deposited in the Office of the Secretary of State. Respectfully submitted, Dennis Stuttgart, Governor.
Senator Heineman.
Mr. President, thank you, Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen of the Senate. You know, as we draw to an end, and you had mentioned this morning, Mr. President, how important the secretaries are to us, the interns, the pages, and there's one other party that's very important to all of us, those of us that have spouses, that we know that there's no way we could ever do this without the support of our spouses, not only to run for election, but then as we serve here, without a really supportive partner to do this. So I'd like to recognize my very supportive partner in all of this, my husband Greg Heineman in the gallery.
Welcome, Greg. Great to see you again, sir.
Mr. President, I'd like to introduce two very important people to me, my grandsons, who happen to be accompanying my daughter and my husband. But there's Richard and Tyler.
Hi. And thank you. Thanks, Doug, for sharing Trudy. She's just been spectacular. Senator Schleckaway.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the body. Well, it wouldn't be fitting to have a final legislative day without making reference to our commemoration calendar. And I see former Majority Leader Steve Cutler, who's one of our own's husband, up in the gallery. And I was honored to be asked to carry a commemoration for Mr. Cutler's father, Keith Cutler. Many of you know my dad's family hails from the Britton, South Dakota area of northeast South Dakota. And there's one name that rings synonymous when you talk about baseball and athletics, and that's the Cutler name that hails from Claremont, South Dakota. Many of you have followed the old amateur baseball teams, the legendary Claremont Honkers. And so what this commemoration does is honor Keith Cutler, who's a legendary baseball player and founder of amateur baseball teams in the northeast part of the states. He's been a tireless promoter of baseball, and he was inducted into the South Dakota Baseball Hall of Fame in 1996. So I just think one final commemoration, and it makes it extra special that we have Senator Cutler here to share in that as well. So thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to transmit herewith House Bill 1251, which has passed the House, and your favorable consideration is respectfully requested. Respectfully, Karen Gertis, Chief Clerk.
Motions and resolutions.
Senator Olson moves that a committee of three on the part of the Senate be appointed to meet with a like committee on the part of the House to fix the time of adjournment sine die, which motion...
Oh. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Announce the committee as Senators Teason, Krebs, and Hunstad.
Senator Olson moves that a committee of three on the part of the Senate be appointed to meet with the like committee on the part of the House to wait upon His Excellency the Governor to inform him that the legislature has completed its labors, is ready to adjourn sine die, and to ascertain if he has any further communications to make to the legislature.
Is there a second?
Aye.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. President announced that such committee is comprised of Senators Olson, Brown, and Frerichs. Senator Olson and Senator Frerichs, would you please approach? All of our interns front and center, please. This is where you get your pledge names. Come on up front. This is the front.
Do you want to come and say some words? Do you want to come up and say some?
Thank you, Mr. President, and members of the body. Everything that we do here is for the next generation of South Dakotans. You've got before you just that. It's the next generation of great leaders in our state. These young people have worked harder than any other group since 1993 that I'm aware of as interns. They really are at our beck and call for everything from a glass of water to research that we need in a timely manner. And I can honestly say that I haven't seen a finer class, and with heavy heart, I have to say goodbye to you, but at the same time, I guess I would revise that to say aloha. So stay in touch.
Certainly echo those comments, but also need to thank the interns. In our line, with only five of us, we relied on our interns very, very heavily, and they were kind of like our sixth and seventh senators, and it wasn't just the case on the Democrat side. It certainly is on both sides where our interns have been very important. I know many of us are probably looking out for our jobs as senators, that these interns will be ready for action very soon. And when we say that, I really truly mean that. Young people throughout the state are ready to lead, are ready to heed the call of action. So we look forward to your continued service for our state.
Thank you, Mr. President.
The only thing I would add is please encourage others to serve, and that's why we're on this earth, to serve others. So we're looking for great things, and we know that you won't disappoint. Ladies and gentlemen, our interns. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, get back in your seats. Come on. While they're doing that, also I'd like for you to recognize, I call it the silent service from the Navy. We would call that the submarine individuals, but the people that keep the facilities going. And they're not all here, but you've been very kind. And as we all know, all work has dignity. We have a governor who is the son of janitors, custodians. And all of us have had different jobs. But you really have to hand it to the leaders and all those people who've kept the facilities up. And although this is going to embarrass him, right up here to the president's left is Raleigh Isaacson. He's head of physical plant and the Capitol grounds up here. Would you wave your hand, please, and we'll give you a round of applause. I'm sorry, Senator Krause.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to take a brief moment to recognize Teen Pack, which is here, has been in town here all week, the older ones from age 13 through 18 all week, and then today is the group of 8 to 12-year-olds, one-day class. And these this group focuses on leadership and citizenship and spiritual growth, and I'm proud to be their sponsor along with Dusty Johnson. I just wanted to recognize the great contribution Teen Pack gives to our state.
Thank you, Senator. Okay, consideration of reports of committees, please.
Senator Gardner's moves that the report of the Conference Committee on House Bill 1208, as found in the Journal of the 37th Legislative Day of the Senate Journal, it's a House Journal, be adopted.
Comments? Senator Garnas.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the body. What I'll quickly do is just walk you through the bill. It's had a couple different forms. Things have been added, deleted. And then what I'd like to do is just go back over why I think all portions of it are important. Then, of course, I want you would ask for your vote on that. Three sections, three main areas to it. Number one is reducing mandates. It would deal with criminal background investigation and checks in our public schools. The next part of it, 2 through 4, would deal with bus driving and areas within that in terms of the appropriate training. One thing I would point out that this is something that can be negotiated. It is something that it can be a share or mail pretty simply within a school district. Each school district can sit down, have a negotiated agreement, agree on this. And the one thing I would also add to this, both on the House and the Senate side, I think what we have done, we've thought a little differently this year, and I think that is came from where we started at the very beginning of the session with the proposed 10% cuts. I think everybody looked at things differently. We looked for ways to make the whole thing work, and I think this is part of it. Senator Olson and Representative Gosch, they came together, and one of the things that they really pushed is, let's look at things different. Let's look at, can we strip some mandates? Can we make things easier? Can we make things more flexible? So I think that part of it really does that. Number two deals with the sparse school and the general fund cap. And again, what this simply would do would strip that. There would be no restrictions on sparse schools in terms of when they receive their payments and if they would be under a fund cap. The fund cap would be gone. I think it's consistent with what we've done over the course of the session. The governor has been behind this in terms of giving more flexibility, more local control, letting the people at the home base, let them decide. And I think, again, the governor has certainly supported this and worked for this, and I certainly agree with it in that respect. Fund balances, again, I think it's important to note when we think about this, I think this actually will hear an argument that what will happen under this, it will allow 5 more schools to go into the sparsity system. We've capped what it is. We currently cut the sparse schools 10%. It's about $1.6 million. This would allow 5 more schools to come in under the current formula that we set up for sparse school districts. But one thing I would mention, when we look at fund balances, they're quite different, whether we're in Phillips, South Dakota, or whether we're in Sioux Falls or Rapid City or Yankton. The fund balance may be 30% in those places, but the dollar amount is drastically different night and day. And one thing, while I make the argument how it helps these sparse schools is if they're sitting around that 28, 29%, all of a sudden they get an influx of a few more students. Something else comes up where they're are able to add to that, they would actually lose their sparse school status. They would lose their sparse school status if they went back over 30%. And I think we'd all agree that some of the school districts that have now, that would, in the system, and the ones that we would add, that would be unfortunate to say the least. So I certainly want to make that point with you too. I certainly don't believe we're taking from the have-nots and giving to the haves. That is not the case. Again, what we've done with this, we've created fundamental fairness in our opinion. We're not arbitrarily saying that these school districts can't receive a little extra money because of their situation. It's uniform. It's consistent. It streamlines it. It makes it fair for everyone. Everybody's on the same playing field, playing by the same rules. I think overall, whether we look at education funding, whether we look at state government funding, whether we look at overall government in general, that's our ultimate goal. That's what we try to do when we do that. And finally, the title amendment, which changed, I think it makes a lot of sense. And simply with the title amendment, it allows for the flexibility, and that's why I think those two can be put together. With that being said, I'd certainly stand by for any questions, and again, I would ask you to support and adopt the committee report. Thank you, Mr. President, members of the body.
Thank you, Representative Garnes. Representative Maher. Or Senator, I'm sorry.
Question for the sponsor.
State your question.
Senator Garnes, can you address the five schools that will be coming, or five or six schools that will be coming into the sparsity formula?
Do you wish to answer the question, Senator?
Thank you, Senator, from the great counties of Butte, Corson, et cetera. These would be the five schools that come into play. One would be Haakon County, one would be Lyman County, one would be Fulton, one would be Highmore Herald, and the other one would be Miller.
Thank you. Mr. President?
Thank you, Senator Maher.
Can I speak to the bill?
I'm sorry, you have the floor. Yes,
thank
sir.
You.
I apologize.
Members of the body, I'm going to rise today to ask you to oppose this conference committee report. While I agree with sections 1, 2, and 3, 4, however, I have a huge problem with section 7. Here we are, the last day, the last hour, the last second to last bill, and we are tweaking a formula that has been in place for the last 5 years. Yes, does this formula need to be addressed? It probably does. But there's more than what we are doing here in this formula that we should be talking about. Is an fall enrollment of 500 or less? Can that be debated? Absolutely. Are there at least 15 miles between a post-secondary institution? Absolutely. Maybe it should be 25 miles. But no, we are talking about one little caveat in a whole litany of requirements to become sparse. And once we start addressing this, we take this pot of money we have out there and we add more schools, and so those schools that are already receiving sparse money will now receive less dollars. So essentially, we are going to take from the Faith and the Bison, and we're going to take that money away from them, and we're going to add it to Miller, a school district that's a Class A school that is now going to be considered sparse, and we're going to yet put them on the same playing field as a Faith and a Bison who cover huge distances and a small population base. I'd ask you to think twice before we go and we vote on this conference committee report, because this has grave implications to what we are doing and where we are going with our small schools. Yes, I think this was originally planned to have a 30% cap because it was needed to keep other schools out and to address the needs of small rural schools. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, and I apologize for not giving you all my attention. I've received a couple of different questions coming from different mechanisms on this motion. This is final action. So what's being debated is a motion of final action that's on the conference committee report. So the discussion is for failure or passing of the conference committee report, which is the bill. I just wanted to apprise you of that, and thank you for coming and in sending me the messages, too. Further remarks on Senator Garnes's motion. Senator Bogalka, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to speak in favor of Senator Garnes's motion. I've got a few reasons here. We did pass out of here Senate Bill 200 overwhelmingly a couple weeks ago, which took away all fund balance caps. And I agreed with that. I thank the governor for bringing that, because I have never agreed with those caps, and I'll tell you why. We have all gotten hundreds of emails from our constituents asking us, why don't you take some more money out of reserve? There's umpteen million in there in your cash fund, etc. And what do we always answer? Well, that's our cash flow fund. That's our checking account. You can't just take a one-day snapshot. That goes up and down and up and down depending on how you pay your bills. That's the same way with this fund balance, is 30%. It's a one-day count. Some of the schools that are under right now may go over. Some that are over now may go under. Second point, there are no sparse schools in my district. There may never be. We're a little more populated. Hopefully, there never will be. We have a problem with Miller. Miller is a decent-sized town, but there's only 444 kids in their school district right now. They are under the 500 substantially. I believe Highmore Herald together isn't too far behind that. There are other Class A schools, if you look at the three-class systems, that would be in classified as a sparse school. So I would say be careful, small schools. You may get what you ask for here, and you may not get your sparsity factor in the future. Think of this as an ice cream cone, three scoops. The bottom scoop is a per-student allocation. We already took the fund balance off of that and the second scoop, which is a small school factor. The third scoop is your sparsity factor. Now, back when I was in the House, I was on the Education Committee for 4 years. The sparsity bill came up. Even though you all know I'm a big advocate for small schools, I voted against that. I thought, they're already getting the small school factor. Why do they need it? Maybe I voted against it because there weren't any in my district. But now that we have it, and obviously we put the balance in that bill when it was passed because we had a balance cap on everything else. If you didn't, it would have been inconsistent. Now, when we take it off everything else, I believe it would be inconsistent to leave it on just the sparse schools. Senator Maher is right. There is a pie of money for sparse schools. It's not a big pie. It's the third scoop. Right now, is there 20 schools that get a cut? There may be 25. We don't know exactly because this is based on that one-day snapshot. The fund balance, I believe it's June 30th of 2011, so we don't even know for sure how many schools are going to fall under this. Going back to the fund balance, I've got schools in my district that even though they were penalized in the past for having too big of a fund balance on that day, they actually had to borrow money during the year to pay their bills. It's just like our state's cash flow fund. It goes up and down. So I would urge you to support the motion. This isn't, if we don't vote for this today, we kill it. You say, well, this is the last day, et cetera, et cetera. Why are we talking about this now? Well, if we don't talk about it now, it'll come up again next year. Would you rather put it off? Why put off till tomorrow what you can do today? So I would urge that small school supporters out there, I love the little town of Faith, but if the smart schools don't hang together, they may hang alone. Thank you.
Senator Heineman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, I rise in opposition to this amendment. I was, back to the institutional history, I was in the room when we talked about sparsity in the beginning, and we knew that there were a group of schools, small or not, that simply were in an isolated, probably rural area, that did have some extraordinary challenges, and we said at the time, we're going to take out of that big pot of state dollars, and we're going to take a piece of that, and we're going to apply it to the sparse schools. They have some extraordinary challenges. But we did it carefully because we said we know that whenever we take money out of the huge pot, it does affect every other school. And so we said if we're going to create those sparse schools, we're going to make sure that they actually do have that need. Because other schools may have dollars coming in from other revenue sources. So we were very clear at the time, and those who supported the sparsity formula agreed. We will put that fund cap on it, that fund balance on it. It will have, it's different than the rest of the, the per student allocation because everybody gets that. But this sparsity was a special allowance for schools that have special challenges. And so that day in that room, when the supporters of sparsity put that together, they agreed. They said, yes, we will put that reserve fund balance on it. If schools have extra dollars coming in from whatever source and they have a higher reserve, they probably don't need that extra dollar. If they fall below the 30%, then absolutely they would be in. But it was part of the deal, it was part of the discussion, and I'd ask you to resist this amendment and keep it as it was. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Further remarks? Senator Roden.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate. Well, I wanted to rise and make a couple comments, and I think a lot of the things that I wanted to cover have already been covered, and so I'll try not to retrace some of that ground. But I think just the nature of this conversation is evidence that we need to put this to bed. We are adopting here, the motion here is to adopt a conference committee on House Bill 1208, and I would ask you to pull it up on your computers and look at the original language in 1208. We have brought a whole new set of criteria, a whole new set of concepts into this bill, and now we're standing here debating those concepts. Some of them are significant. The ones that matter, i.e. the sparsity, are significant. It's no longer about these repealing. Remember, the original language was to repeal busing requirements. Look at the repealers now. They're very insignificant. What has been brought into the mix is something that's significant. Ladies and gentlemen, there are three things at play here. Policy, process, and politics. A wise man has told me over the years, dozens of times, policy over politics. But I would suggest to you that in order to reach good policy, you have to honor the process. And I would submit to you that it doesn't honor the process on the last day of regular session to vote to adopt a conference committee report on issues that we've not allowed the process to work on. And I would submit that that's what we see today. Again, some of the policies contained in it, we've tried to debate here, but I do not think that we do any justice by trying to sort through that here on this day. I would urge you to oppose the motion to adopt. Thank you.
Senator Nordstrom.
Thank you, Mr. President. From an appropriation point of view, we've got $1.6 million, and we're deciding how to spend it today. And there's a plan A and a plan B. Plan A is to give it to the people that qualified under the rules. Plan B is to give it to the people that qualify under the new rules. I am not comfortable, and I will vote against this, I'm not comfortable going back to 20 school districts that have already taken some hits and have qualified under the rules as we came into this session and telling them that their funding is going to be substantially reduced because we've only got so much, and the question is, do we divide it between 20 schools per child, or I believe it's 24 or 25 schools. And some of the schools that are coming in are at least using the one example, is a substantially larger school than the first one, the normal sparsity schools. And so when you bring in schools that may be larger than normal, the division becomes even more painful for those schools that were originally part of the formula. So I think we can have a debate, but it should go through the committee process. I think everybody should have the opportunity to be here. And I just can't support this because it is going to be painful. The original intent of sparsity was to help, and I'll use Faith South Dakota's example. And we've had testimony about the conditions and the lack of ability to run the school. And we understand that people drive 50 miles to get to school, and sometimes they stay in town because they can't make the round trip of 100 miles a day. That's what's needed on sparsity, and that's why we've supported this, is because we've got to make a decision. If we want to have schools out on the prairie, we want to make a decision if we want to have families out on the prairie. And I think what this legislature did that, and we very carefully drafted the guidelines. And if we pass this today, we will put another nail in the coffin of those schools that this was originally intended to help. And so with this, I would ask you to resist this, and let's come back and have a full process on it next year. Thank you.
Does anybody wish to speak before Senator Garnas speaks a second time? Hearing none, Senator Garnas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the body, I appreciate the debate today, and I have great respect for
all
of
this. Your mic's not hot, I don't think.
Testing?
Thanks.
Thank you very much. And I just want to say I appreciated the debate today. You know, my personal opinion, besides Senator Bogolki's, kind of made me think I want to eat some ice cream now. But besides that, a couple points I will make. I think it has that extensive debate. It's been in committee a couple different times, debated on the floor, debated within caucuses. These are concepts in terms of mandates that we talk about each and every year, and I think that's one of the two bright spots in the bill. And again, I guess I don't buy it that we didn't debate it, we didn't talk about it. You know, my personal opinion is we've had great debate on it, and people have done a very good job on both sides of the issue. I just want to take you back to what I think is the most important thing about the bill. I think, again, it creates fundamental fairness. I really do. Fundamental fairness. I think it creates uniformity within the system of the school systems, the fund cap balances. It's consistent. It streamlines it. I think it treats everyone fairly. I think everyone plays by the same rules. And I think it can be, unfortunately, when we single a district out for this reason or that reason. And you can make the arguments on the other side. We heard, well, it was an A school. I mean, there are some A schools that are within five kids of being a B school. Miller School District has 144 kids. You know what they had 10 years ago? They had 772. So I think you got to look at all those, and it's careful when you talk about all those things. I'll wrap it up. Again, thank you. I've appreciated the debate on it. I hope you can adopt the report. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Further remarks? Hearing none, the question before the Senate is Senator Garnas's motion that the report of the Conference Committee on House Bill 1208 be adopted. Those in favor of that motion will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will please call the roll.
Senator Adelstein?
Aye.
Bogolka?
Aye.
Bradford?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Cutler?
Aye.
Frerichs?
No.
Frisley?
No.
Garnos?
Aye.
Gray?
No.
Hansen?
No.
Haverly?
Aye.
Heinemann?
No.
Holeen?
No.
Hunstead?
No.
Hunhoff?
No.
Johnston?
Aye.
Kraus?
No.
Krebs?
No.
Lederman?
Aye.
Maher?
No.
Nelson?
Aye.
Nordstrup?
No.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Peters?
Aye.
Putnam?
No.
Rampelberg?
No.
Rave?
Aye.
Roden?
No.
Schleckaway?
Aye.
Sutton?
Aye.
Tiedemann?
Aye.
Teason?
No.
Valley?
Aye.
Senator Nygaard?
No.
Mr. President, we have 18 ayes, 17 nays.
Senator Garnas's motion that the report of the Conference Committee on House Bill 1208 be adopted, having received a majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. The report is so adopted. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 1251, an act to appropriate money for the ordinary expenses of the legislative, judicial, and executive departments of the state, the expenses of state institutions, interest on the public debt, and for common schools.
Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 1251. An act to appropriate money for the ordinary expenses of the legislative, judicial, and executive departments of the state, the expenses of state institutions, interest on the public debt, and for common schools.
House Bill 1251, having received a second reading, is up for consideration and final passage. Are there any remarks?
Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. President. There are probably few bills that we debate in the legislature that we spend nearly every single day of that legislative session discussing. House Bill 1251 is one of those exceptions. From the first day that this group gathered in the Capitol, this has certainly been an item of discussion. And today, we have a final product. That final product was the result of the efforts of many people trying to find a compromise. First and foremost, probably the Appropriations Committee, who I would certainly thank for their efforts. They put in a lot of extra hours to try to do this and to try to find a reasonable solution. I also see up in the gallery we have some of our House appropriators with us today as well, and I'd certainly thank Chairman Wink and his team for the efforts that they put forward. I'd also like to thank our LRC staff, and I do see some of those folks here as well. They put in a tremendous amount of work trying to give us the details that we need to be able to make good decisions. And last, I would also like to thank the administration, the governor, and his staff from the Bureau of Finance and Management. While they're a separate branch of government, I think we all realize at the end of the day we need to work together, and they've been exceptionally helpful to the legislature this year in trying to come to answers that make sense for the state of South Dakota. You know, as I pick up this document, I flip through it, and it's really a bunch of numbers. It looks like a bunch of numbers. But I want folks to realize that for a second, these numbers mean something. They mean something to every one of us that sit in this room here today. I think a lot of times people think that we look at a budget in a vacuum, and I think that's certainly not the case. Look, my oldest daughter entered kindergarten this year, and I've got three more kids to follow. So don't think for a second that the next two decades, education is not very personal to me and my family. I have a couple of grandparents who are probably looking at the possibility of going into a nursing home in the next couple of years. Medicaid is very important to me and my family, because at some point I would expect that those people will be there. If anything, I think this year has helped not only the legislature, but the state as a whole realize what this government does. Often I think there's the misperception that the state government is really one big bureaucracy. But when you get down to it, the real purpose of this state government is, number one, to educate our future generations. Number two, to take care of those people who maybe can't take care of themselves. Number three, to have a criminal system that helps enforce the laws that we pass here as a body. And then a very, very minute part is everything else that you see. And not that that's not important, but when we get down to it, it's about educating kids, it's about taking care of people, and it's about enforcing the laws that we as a society have adopted. I won't kid anyone. It's been a struggle over the last 38 days to try to find an answer that makes sense. And I think this body has been exceptionally deliberative in taking a proposal from the governor and trying to find ways to stay within the budget and yet make sure that we're not doing harm to society, that we still have the ability to educate those future generations, that we are still taking care of the people that we need to take care of. So today, you have the result of 38 days worth of compromise here in House Bill 1251. It's not a perfect document, But I do think it's probably one of the better answers that we could have come up with and still eliminate the structural deficit for this state, have a fiscally responsible way to approach state government, and still do the things that we need to do as a state. With that, I would certainly encourage your support of House Bill 1251. Thank you.
Further remarks. Senator Sutton.
I have an amendment at the desk.
It's marked 1251, Uniform Yoke. Is that correct?
No, it's ML.
Okay. Mike Lima.
Mike Lima.
Has it been distributed?
It has.
And do you move it at this time, Senator?
Second.
I do.
Comments? Senator Sutton.
Permission to speak to the bill and the amendment?
Granted, sir.
Before I talk about the amendment, I'd just like to echo the comments of Senator Brown, as well as thanking the governor, along with the Bureau of Finance and Management. Also like to thank the LRC and our committee secretaries who are with us today. I'd also like to thank the front desk secretaries, all members of the committee, the joint committee, as well as our president and lieutenant governor for doing such a good job and having such a good sense of humor throughout the whole process. With that, I'd also like to thank Senator Putnam, Haverly, Tiedemann, Rampelberg, Heineman, Peters, and Nostrup, and especially Chairman Brown for welcoming me as a freshman legislator and a freshman to the Appropriations Committee. I'd like to commend them on all their hard work and dedication. It's been a challenging session for everybody. I know it has. It has for me, and I think we can say that it has been for everybody. Many people don't realize how much time and work goes into this process, and I commend every one of you for that. We may not all agree on the outcome of the general bill, but we have to pass a balanced budget. So it is what it is. Now on to amendment. What this amendment proposes is to take $36 million in interest, and I put an emphasis on interest, out of the Education Enhancement Trust Fund as a one-time payment for state aid to education. I understand the arguments against this amendment. It would affect the future value of what we earn. I'm not arguing that. But I believe it would be irresponsible of us to not make an attempt to fully fund our future leaders. Many people claim that the dollar does not dictate the value of one's education. I beg to differ. If the dollar is used for efficient and effective programs, then it makes a huge difference. I know that most, if not all, of our rural schools efficiently educate our students with the funding they are allocated. If these proposed cuts become a reality, the schools that are the most efficient will notice the most irreparable damage. Efficient schools will then become inefficient due to the cuts of important programs and losses of valuable teachers. Just imagine for a second what our schools could offer if they were fully funded. They could offer more pragmatic classes such as entrepreneurship, house building, and a wide variety of AP courses. These programs are incredibly efficient in seriously preparing our children for success. Do we believe that we live in a society that only requires a few academic program offerings? Our world is ever changing, and we have an always increasing need for a wide variety of professions. It is no longer just about reading, writing, and arithmetic. This is the foundation, but we need to offer more. We must be creative when educating our students, so that they are prepared for all walks of life. We as a state must be able to compete not only on a state-by-state basis, but on an international level as well. It is a good thing that South Dakotans have a noteworthy work ethic that we have passed on to their children, that they have passed on. Just imagine the enormous scope of opportunities for these hardworking kids if we would continue to improve our education system and not set it back. The sky would be the limit. We would have the most qualified, as well as the most hardworking future generation of students, employees, and leaders. This is one of the most important economic development strategies upon which to continue building the solid foundation of South Dakota. In future years, we will look back at this day in history. In my mind, and I'm sure many of your minds, this will be a sad day. It is a sad day to me in that we are celebrating a 6.6% cut to an already underfunded education system. I thank you for your time, and I encourage your support of this amendment.
Further remarks on the motion to amend. Senator Heideman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, I, too, was a rookie on appropriations this year, although not a rookie to the whole process and the legislature. But I, too, just want to take a minute and thank Senator Sutton and thank all of the people on the appropriations. It was a great process with great respect, I think, from everybody that was involved. I also want to compliment you on your comments about education. I served on education for 8 years. There is absolutely nothing more important that we do in this state. And I've seen over the years what we've done, what the taxpayers have done, what the department has done, what the schools have done, the educators have done in education in South Dakota. And I'm convinced, even though there is a drop in funding in this next year, that trend, that ability to go for excellence will continue. I'm convinced of that. It would be great if we could come up with another $36 million. But to take it out of the trust funds, I'm just a numbers person. I know within the Education Enhancement Trust Fund, there are today some additional earnings over and above the principal. I think maybe $40 to $50 million. But let me caution you. The investment office's major objective as they maintain and manage these trust funds is to make sure that every year we're going to have enough money above principal to get that 4% distribution to the general funds. Now, that's about a $30 million distribution every year. It's an important part of our general funds. And in FY10, some of that went away. The education enhancement and the healthcare trust funds, because they dropped below principal, we couldn't take any money out of those. We know how quickly the market can turn. In 07, at the end of 07, we had something similar to today. We had a lot of earnings over and above the principal, and it looked like times were always going up. December of 08 hit, we were $30 million under in terms of our earnings, which meant in FY10, we took nothing out of the education enhancement and the healthcare trust fund. We're recovering today in an FY11 and an FY12. We're going to be able to, again, take about a $30 million amount of money into our general funds from the trust fund. It is our important responsibility that we keep those trust funds, not only for this year, for next year, for 5 years, but for the future. That's how the people set them up. It's our responsibility to make sure that that money is there. So I appreciate your comments. I know that the educators and the taxpayers who invest tremendous amounts of money in our kids, it's not just the state aid, but I've been often fond to say, go back and look at all of the investment from our taxpayers, state, local, county, federal, private donations. We have taxpayers who absolutely value education, and this year will be another great year for education, I have no doubt. So I pose the amendment out of great respect. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Further remarks on Senator Sutton's motion to amend? Hearing none, the question before the Senate is Senator Sutton's motion marked 1251 ML. Those in favor of that motion to amend signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
Motion lost. Further remarks on House Bill 1251. Senator Adelstein.
Mr. President.
Senator Adelstein.
Yes, thank you very much. Sitting at the desk is an amendment, 1251 UX, which I had planned to offer. I will not offer it, but with your indulgence and with the help of the leadership, I would like to speak to it nonetheless.
Granted, sir.
Thank you. This amendment was not offered as a criticism of the Appropriations Committee. Quite the contrary. It was a taunting task to try and raise these issues, to open the general bill, and quite frankly, not being a Don Quixote and having learned that a significant number of the votes that I had 3 days ago have evaporated, I choose not to offer the amendment, but I do want to raise several issues to share with my colleagues. This Appropriations Committee was charged with a responsibility which they carried out fairly and admirably. Had I offered the amendment, I would have asked them, now that they've done their job as appropriators, would they please join me and vote for this amendment? Obviously, I'm not going to do that. But I must reflect on the fact that they had a responsibility, and having been here when appropriators were somewhat different in the Senate, none of whom are sitting here in the Senate today, what some of us have referred to as a renegade Appropriations Committee did as they saw fit, I have more reason than most to respect what happened. The reason for this amendment, for a simple little $10-11 million, is primarily children. My deep concern are the cuts to physicians that take care of Medicaid patients that are young. Where I live in Rapid City, as you may know, we take a disproportionate share of Medicaid, especially for children, Black Hills Pediatrics Clinic, and a number of individual pediatrics physicians. They are now seeing as many children as they possibly can, and the reason I felt so strongly about this amendment is I don't know what will happen to those children when they cannot be seen at the community health center. They cannot wait as long as they will have to in the emergency room, and in fact will not see a pediatrician when they're there, and already Black Hills Peds have exceeded their percentage of Medicaid because they have to pay the bills. So the reason for this is that I hope you that you all will look forward, and that the interim appropriation meetings, when there are any funds available, will try and divert those funds, particularly to pediatric physicians, because there is a specific classification for cuts in that area. The next thing I need to raise is, of course, nursing homes are a problem, some more than others, and I appreciate the fact that the letter of intent will specifically differentiate between them, but I hope that the Interim Appropriation Committee, having served on the Appropriations Committee, I hope that Interim Appropriations Committee will look carefully at the results and listen to those, especially from West River, sparse distance as the year goes by. You know, coming here to offer this amendment, which I fully intended to do, someone said, well, how could you do that? And I guess I was still going to do it about an hour ago, even if it wouldn't have flown. And as I said to someone, I guess I would do it because while the bill's amendment might not fly, as long as that flag standing outside this Capitol and in front of the memorial across the street looking at each other, as long as those two flags fly, I can stand up and say anything and I can offer the amendment. Now, during the last few days, in fact, I appeared yesterday with the amendment, and during other discussions, I've been asked, well, where would the money come from? And more as an educational, although I was hoping it would get me a vote or two, more as an education, you'll take a look at the Constitution of the State of South Dakota, which we've all sworn to uphold as we swore to uphold this Constitution of the United States. The Constitution very clearly provides that we don't have to specify the funds from which we are taking our dollars. All we have to do is offer a budget that with the anticipated earnings and the uncommitted fund balances, and as you'll see, attached are almost a half a billion in unfunded account balances, that we would have met the obligation of the Constitution. And lastly, there's a practical consideration for this amendment, which I haven't offered, and that is, at $10 million, that's less than $1 million a month, when we have in our checkbook every month somewhere between $750 million or $1,250 million, a check once a month directed by this body would not have any effect at all on any balances. But that didn't happen. In conclusion, and I think this is the longest speech I've given in this body, perhaps ever, or in the House even ever, some of you joined me, I know you did, Mr. President, at the prayer breakfast with Mr. Ward Bream, a Minneapolis entrepreneur, who went into some detail of what he had learned about the poor of the world. And then he went on to say something. He started quoting from what you all call the New Testament, something about feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, setting free the captive. And when I got home that night, I told Linda, just a minute, isn't this what I read on Yom Kippur as the obligation of a Jew? And then I suddenly remembered that a pastor, a Lutheran pastor who came to Lutheran Social Services Retreat, and by the way, we're going to be heard at LSS, but when this Lutheran pastor came in, he said, we want to talk today about Jesus not as a Savior, but not when we talk about his mission, we want to talk about as a tzaddik, which means a righteous person, and that means taking care of people. So Linda said, well, that quote from the New Testament was the same thing. Yeah, it was the same thing. So I asked my friend Larry Roden, who found the place in the New Testament for me, where it says that what you do for the least of mine, you do for me. I'm disappointed that we couldn't do what I think we should have done for the least of us.
Senator Frerichs. Well, thank you very much, Mr. President, and fellow members of the Senate. It certainly is an honor and privilege to be able to share the time that we have with all of you, and we've had a number of agreements and disagreements, and it's one of the beauties of our process, and I thank you for all of the enjoyment we have had, and of course, we know we certainly have our disappointments as well. First off, I need to thank the appropriators. I know that the appropriations chairman has taken his work very seriously, as well as all of those folks who I give you a lot of credit for being able to sit in meetings as long as you do, because I don't think I would be able to handle sitting in meetings that long. I'd also like to thank, of course, our legislative research staff, along with the governor's office and his staff in Bureau of Finance and Management. I truly know that all of you have given this your best effort, and my remarks do not in any way try to insinuate that that you took your job lightly, and I really truly mean that. Mr. President, I thank you for your willingness to be very candid with us, and allowing, even when we may have a little bit of want to smoke out and extend the rights that we have. I appreciate you not gaveling down, Mr. President. But I'd like to thank the President Pro Tem. It's been a joy working with him as far as we go through this process. Mr. Majority Leader and I have worked together throughout my tenure here in the legislature, and that our friendship has only been increased through this process, and I know that I can honestly say when we drive home from here and all of us head back to our home communities, I know that the good leader and I are looking forward to getting back home, but we know that our friendship will continue, and we will have many discussions in the future and continue to have
good conversation. I really would like to say that as far as Democrats and that what we have for the five of us, that I do appreciate the involvement and the willingness that folks have made an effort to ensure that our views and that, that our ability to the process has been respected. Obviously, there's times where we wish that we could be even more involved, but having know that that we're in a system where obviously the majority rules, but yet the minority's rights need to be protected, I understand how that works. But just a few of the examples as far as where Democrats have had an opportunity to be involved, and I do need to give credit. If we look at some of the Medicaid discussions, even if we look at on the projections side of things, and of course from the governor's office, he has extended his arm and willingness to meet with us at different times, and I do appreciate that. Certainly wouldn't have to happen that way. You know, if you look across this country and other states, it probably does not happen that way. So I need to make sure that we are clear there. Having said that, I reserve the right that we would still like to be even more involved, and hopefully we can have those coalitions that continue to build. If we look specifically at this budget bill that is before us, at first glance, I do need to say that local nursing homes fared okay if you look at where they rank in the grand scheme of things. They certainly could have been cut worse, and if you look at the initial budget that was proposed to us, our local nursing homes were not looking at whether or not they're going to, you know, adjust staff or any other sort of adjustments. They were looking at whether or not they could even keep their doors open for one more year. I'm not certain that all of them still will be able to keep their doors open, but I sure hope they will be able to, and I know that there is some green light at the end of the tunnel for them as we move forward. I applaud the efforts that have been made as far as looking at doing some adjustments on Medicaid. We know that we're still looking at this next year. I hope that all of us will still look long-term. And I know that the governor, along with the leadership on the other side of the aisle, are looking long-term. But I hope that they will also realize that there's real people that are involved here. And I have brought up the example of Medicaid, but of course, education has been a highlight. And if you just take an example as far as where does this cut for education really resonate, and how does it look maybe this next year? If we take the example of increased class sizes, in my line of work outside of the legislature, I have the privilege to do some teaching. And this last fall, I had a very good comparison to think about. I had one class of 35. I had another class of 6. Now, I teach more than just those two classes, but this would be an example. It's very clear that with that class of 35, as an instructor, I was limited. Limited in the amount of interaction that I could have with those students to learn more about their backgrounds and to make their education the best that it could be. We also were very limited in any sort of outside class activities, because how do you take 35 students around? Those 6 individuals that were in that other class, we took many trips, and we were able to make sure that they were career ready. That's where we'll start to see the real effects, even in this next year, if you look at these cuts to education with the increased class sizes. I know that props are not allowed here on the floor, so I will only ask that you draw your attention at some point to the number of postcards that I have on my desk, along with the surveys and a number of correspondence that I have from people just from Northeast South Dakota. And those people have spoken, and they have spoken very loudly. And as a result, we can see there have been some adjustments made to this budget, and I appreciate those efforts. But I certainly know that we have other options, and those other options have already been tried, not only in the Appropriations Committee, but here on the floor previously. As we close out today, I simply ask that we continue to keep an open mind, and I know that my handshake will be very much open and willing to have many more discussions, and I certainly look forward to working with the rest of you. And with that, Mr. President, I thank you for your indulgence in allowing me to take some time to visit with all of you, and look forward to getting home. It's time to get back to real work. So, thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you for the remarks of my friend. What an honor it is for me to stand in front of this group and be allowed to have the title of majority leader. It's really tough job. Don't need to tell anybody that, especially when you're the title of a majority leader is that you're leading 30 other leaders, and they have been that in their own rights. Everybody has brought so much to the table this year, and we've got such a great group. It truly is an honor for me to stand here as their spokesperson. And I've thought about, you know, the tough decisions that we've had to make this year, and kind of went back to one of my favorite movies when I was younger, Back to the Future. Michael J. Fox's rambunctious character got to use this souped-up DeLorean that ran on Pepsi and Twinkies and leftover Chinese food, and he got to go back in time, and how fun that would be. And I thought, geez, I could sure use that DeLorean right about now. I'd like to go back to that year when the majority leader stood here and he had excess revenues, and how fun that would be to be able to dole out those funds and enhance programs in that manner. But that's not reality. And the reality is that we had to make some tough decisions. Tough decisions have to be made by tough decision makers. And we've got a great group of those. And it truly has been an honor for me to work with these folks. You know, speaking of tough jobs, every one of us has a spouse back at home. And, you know, Senator Peters' husband back home taking care of her kids, you know. Senator Brown's got four kids, and his wife's taking care of them. My wife's got four kids. Senator Holeen's four kids are here. A lot of us have, well, my friend's eventually going to put down some roots, and he'll share this with me on the kids deal. But, you know, but, you know, the tough part about this is that, you know, you miss a chunk of their lives while you're out here. And we're all out here working for that next generation, like I said earlier about our interns, working for that next generation. My littlest guy, Gordon, is a year and 4 months now. And so he's at that stage where he runs around, and his words are ball. He has two words, ball, 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 ball. That's all he bounces around, ball, ball, ball. Wants to play with balls all day long. His other word is no. And I didn't even know it was possible to use no as a noun and a verb and an adjective and a dangling participle and a predicate adjective, but he does. And he'll be a good politician, too, because he says no. No. And, you know, he'd also, more so than being a great politician, he'd have made a great appropriator. No. 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 And I'm making light of that, but these guys have done a great job. Senator Sutton and the rest of our crew having to say no when the easy answer is yes. You know, we have been able to say yes. We heard from the same folks that sent the postcards and the petitions and said, do not do cuts to education. Don't do cuts to Medicaid. We had to. I truly believe that to get rid of this $127 million structural deficit, those cuts had to be made. We have then, once we got to ratifying the numbers that our appropriations team's done such a great job on, every last dollar of excess revenue went to education. Every dollar went to education. So when we got it all done, everybody says education always comes last. I disagree. We started out the very first day concerned about our next generation, and what we did this year was tough. But it really, I think, had to be done. We also found a compromise for Medicaid. Nobody appreciates the work that the people in our hospitals and nursing homes do more than this body, and it's a good representative of that with what we were able to accomplish. We also proved that there's three different branches of government at work out here in our capital. We had some agreements and disagreements early on with one of those branches, and late in the day with our executive branch even. You know, we feel as a body, and we're joined by the House, that supporting our roads, our farm-to-market roads,
was important. And those roads, not only to support our number one industry in South Dakota, were important, but for the safety of our citizens was important. You know, being able to go back in the future would sure be fun, but I hope that someday when I look back at the past, I can say that we did what was right. We made the tough decisions to reset South Dakota. I'd appreciate your favorable support for House Bill 1251, and I thank you in advance.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, the opportunity that I have of being a member of this honorable body is really something to be talked about. There is an opportunity for me to even serve some many years on the appropriations process. And in the recent history, I am what they might call the elder of that committee on the Senate side. Elder is a nice way of saying I'm old and that I have obviously outlived a lot of other folks that probably would have done a better job. But the fact still remains that we need to talk about a couple things here today that just as a member I need to say, and in many years of being here. There are lots of us in this body and up above in the galleries. There are past legislators, local legislators from the House, and a lot of future legislators that are going to see the opportunity of sine die. And, of course, that means that both houses are equal, the House and the Senate. That's the history and the right of sine die, that neither one shall have the power over the other. And that's the reason for the equal gaveling. So having said that, just the opportunity to serve here, the opportunity for people to see how we operate here in the houses of government and the legislative branch is indeed an honor and a privilege. And I do accept that. But I'm going to stand today and say a couple of words about our leaders now in the appropriations process. I'm talking specifically about Senator Brown. I'm talking specifically about Senator Tiedemann. And I'm talking specifically about Senator Sutton. Each one of them have something to bring to that process. And I've been in that process a long time, and each and every member that comes has something to offer. And it is valid. Senator Sutton, cowboy and banker. And why not? The experience that he's had and knowing about how we can make this state a better place. A great opportunity, and I respect his ability to sit in that committee and tell us the things that mean something to not only him because of his life experiences, but because of his background. Senator Tiedemann, the same thing. An advanced educational experience in the extension services at South Dakota State University. Man who came to this, if you will, the process and started to learn from the ground up. And it might not have been the best days for him because it was difficult to learn from an old guy like me who really came from a very rural background. But I respect his ability to stand and talk about his view of how things should go and then work with everyone to get the job done. And lastly, Senator Brown, thank him for being able to jump into this system actually kind of wearing two hats and getting some things done that needed to be done. And that, indeed, is just my view of how things can be good at the end when we go to sine die. There is always the opportunity, as our good Senate friend, Senator Adelstein, said, those flags that fly out there allow us to stand and say anything, almost anything, that we wish to say to make a difference in this great state. And, of course, after sine die, that will always exist. Thank you, Mr. President. And I would ask one more personal privilege, if I may.
Granted, sir.
Because we're in the midst of talking here and there's emotion, but I need to tell you today that the Dakota Christian senior government class from my county is here, and I'd like to have them stand and be recognized, if they would, please. These are folks that study this government closely. If they'd be stand to be recognized. Thank you, Mr. President. It's indeed a privilege to be able to stand speak here at the Senate.
Thank you, Senator. Further remarks? Senator Nygaard.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, I feel compelled to speak today, being the, as compared to Senator Putnam, I'm the youngest member of the Majority Caucus, having only been a member of that caucus for a little over 3 months. That would make me the youngest member. I really appreciate the attention that you've given me as a new member of your caucus in the deliberations that we've had for the last 37 days. I think you've done a great job. I feel that I've been part of that process. The concerns that the good senator from Pennington County brought forth, I share those concerns. However, I urge, I don't have to urge you. I know how we're going to vote today, and I'm going to vote with you because I think we've done the best we could in a tough time, and we've addressed the needs as well as we could in light of this tough time that this country and our great state is in. I think we have good leadership in this state. I think we're going to move forward to better times, and we're going to do better on this budget next year. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Further remarks? Hearing no further remarks, the question before the Senate is final passage of House Bill 1251. Those in favor of passage will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. The Secretary will please call the roll.
Senator Adelstein? Bagalka?
No.
Bradford?
No.
Brown?
Aye.
Buell?
Yes.
Cutler?
Aye.
Frerichs?
No.
Frisley?
Aye.
Garnos?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
Haverly?
Aye.
Heineman?
Aye.
Holeen?
Aye.
Hunstead?
No.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Kraus?
Aye.
Krebs?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Nordstrup?
Aye.
Nygaard?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Peters?
Aye.
Putnam?
Aye.
Rampelberg?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye.
Schleckaway?
Aye.
Sutton?
No.
Tiedemann?
Aye.
Thiessen?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Senator Adelstein? Adelstein? Senator Adelstein? Mr. President, we have 28 ayes, 6 nays, 1 excused.
House Bill 1251, having received a majority vote of the members elect, is hereby declared passed. Any questions on the title? Hearing none, the title is deemed approved. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Yep. We will be at ease. Did you want to talk, Senator Bradford, or were you just waving to me?
I have an announcement.
Okay, state your announcement.
I would like, as the chairman of the State Tribal Relations Committee, we are due to have an election. It's immediately, if we could, and I'd like to see those members in Conference Room 1 and 2.
What's the number, sir? Conference Room where?
1 and 2.
1 and 2, okay. RC, thank you. Any other announcements while we're at ease? Constitution requires that the presiding officer of the Senate sign in open session bills that have passed both the House and the Senate and read their title into the record. President signing an act to revise the criteria used to exempt certain school districts from the requirement to reorganize. That's House Bill 1093.
You need me? Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Can you want me to open that window?
Well,
you're going to do it by phone?
Thank you. Thanks, sir. President signing an act to appropriate funding for the purpose of one-time increase in state aid to education. That's House Bill 1110. President signing an act to create the Board of Regents Performance Improvement Fund and to make an appropriation therefore. That's House Bill 1235. President is signing an act to revise certain provisions regarding the travel reimbursements for county veteran service officers. That's House Bill 1245. President is signing an act to extend the sunset of the 0.5% increase in the gross receipts tax imposed on visitor-related businesses. That's House Bill 1248.